Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Welcome to How's New York with Brooklyn Real Estate State Attorney Robert Howe. Tonight's going to be our legal topics episode, and we're tackling some answers on wills. Stay tuned for Bob.
Journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn. Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the...
Welcome to How's New York with Brooklyn Real Estate Attorney Robert Howe. Tonight's our legal topics episode, and now here's Bob.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to How's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. And as Jason pointed out, tonight is our legal topic. And the legal topic discussion tonight will be wills and why you need them and any other questions you may have about why you need a will. And Jason actually has a lot of questions about why he needs a will. And Jason, go ahead. What are some of your thoughts on wills?
Well, I know people don't often talk about wills. It's something that's often put off, and you know, get to it, you know, really soon. But then people probably have a lot of questions and a lot of assumptions. But tonight we're going to address a lot of the questions that we got from our online community and questions they have about wills. And this is to provide folks with some info that they can arm themselves with and make sure they get these done, and why they need to have them done. And the first question, obviously, would be, what exactly is a will?
Well, first, to address your initial comments, there is a lot of information out there. Most of it is misinformation about what wills do, what wills don't do. And like anything in life, we only hear bad stories about wills. We only hear the horror stories. Those are newsworthy and sexy and interesting. But for the most part, wills are pretty mundane, you know, things. And I think a necessity in everybody's life, whether or not you ever will use a will, that's another question. But do you need a will? I think everybody does. So what is a will? Well, a will is basically your wish after death as to how your property will be divided among people that you love and care for. Those people could be relatives, they could be friends, they could be charities, churches, synagogues, anything or any person or any organization that you want to benefit. And it's basically your wish that so-and-so, whether it's your spouse or your children or your nieces and nephews, will get assets that you own. And that's the operative term, assets that you own and that are in your name alone. The will is your declaration of how those assets that are in your name alone will go to whoever you want that property to go to. So that is basically a will. Against this backdrop, all states have made wills, in a sense, for people, or some plan for distribution when a person passes away. Those plans are called intestacy or administration. Intestacy is a Latin term, legal term also, for not having a will. Testacy, legal Latin term, having a will. But in the event that a person does not make their own will, their own testacy, and they pass away without a will in place, then this intestate set of laws comes into play. And that basically is the state's plan for how your property should be divided in the event you do not have a will. The story that you hear about property going to the state if you don't have a will is false. Generally, unless you're the last person on the face of the earth with no relatives whatsoever, your property most likely will go to a relative. It may be a distant relative, a person you've never met before or knew about, but it's rare that the property would go to the state. And so that's basically the two distinctions. Will, you decide where things go. No will, the state has divided, you know, has made a plan for you as to how your estate will be divided. But once again, when was the last time the state or government has really made a good plan for you? So it really behooves you to take the matter into your own hands and make your own decisions.
Yeah, I can't imagine that the state or the federal government is dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's on your ad hoc will that they've created for everyone. So that would lead me to another question that we see a lot come up, and it's basically a distinction of what's the difference between, I hear a lot of times, a living will versus a run-of-the-mill will.
Okay, well, yes, actually they have nothing to do with each other. To add confusion to people's lives and to have a lot of questions posed to lawyers, we have come up with two terms that are really very similar but have nothing to do with each other. So a living will is just your declaration about your end-of-life wishes. I do not wish to be kept alive artificially. Basically, that's what a living will is. Living wills are important when maybe you have two sets of families fighting over whether or not to keep you on life support or take you off of life support. Usually there's a pecuniary interest behind that, you know, the people who aren't getting anything probably want to keep you alive, and the people who are getting something probably want to pull the plug so they can get at your money right away. And the courts often say, gee, I wish I knew what the ill person wanted. And sometimes they've made this declaration a living will, and courts will, depending on the jurisdiction, give it various levels of credence and decide whether or not, you know, the person should be kept on life support. So that's a living will. A will, plain old will, is what we discussed earlier. I leave everything to my wife. If my wife does not survive me, then equally to my children. Or I leave everything to my nieces and nephews. Or I leave everything to charity. Or I leave $10,000 to each of these people. My house in such and such part of New York to other people. And then everything that's left over, you know, maybe to grandchildren or a group of people. So that's a will. Unfortunately, they have nothing to do with each other, but are so closely aligned that it causes a lot of confusion. And, you know, lawyers tend to do that with their language, but that's what keeps us in business.
And then how does a trust come into play, and where does that fit into the picture?
Well, trusts are popular among certain groups of people. For instance, I always tell my clients that trusts are super popular in places like Florida. Everybody in Florida has a trust. It's as important as going out every morning with a pair of pants on. They don't go anywhere without having a trust. A trust is a declaration. It's sort of like making a corporation. It's making an entity today. It could be, most likely it's today, like a corporation. And within that entity, you would say, all right, when I die, my property that's in the trust already will go to A, B, and C. So it's sort of like doing a will, but having all of the assets in the name of the trust today, and then upon certain triggering events in the future, the trust will execute your instructions. It really cuts a couple things out. It cuts the surrogate's court out, basically. Surrogate's court is the court of primarily deceased people. And it also, you know, cuts out sometimes outside scrutiny of your estate. In other words, you don't have to file this trust anywhere where it's public viewing, whereas with an estate, it becomes public knowledge and people can see, you know, who you left your property to and what property you had. So trusts are really almost transferring a good percentage of your property today rather than waiting for when you pass away. But when you do pass away, so say the trust, for instance, transfers 80% of your interest in property into a trust, and after your death, the other 20% pops up to make it 100%, and your trust usually says, okay, any asset that I have in the trust will go to A, B, and C. So it's a wildly popular concept. I don't know if it's for everybody. What a lot of people do is they say they want to have a trust, which is great. So some lawyer draws up 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50-page trust, and then you have to transfer property into the trust. And that's where a lot of people fall off. They do a trust. They don't transfer any property into the trust, so the trust is basically an empty trust, has nothing to transfer, no effectiveness whatsoever. So when a person dies, even though they have a trust, nothing has been put into it. So that's a big failing of trust. A second failing of trust is there is a concept in trust of a revocable and irrevocable. Revocable means changeable. You can change your mind. You can change terms. You can undo it. Whereas irrevocable, not changeable, Once you put something in, it's in. Once you write something, it's written. You can't change it. General thought among lawyers is that irrevocable trusts are good. They really perform a pretty good function about getting assets out of your estate, protecting them from Medicaid, protecting them from taxes, etc. Bad point is clients don't like to give up control of their assets. Many times, client's sole asset will be their house that they've lived in for 20, 30, 40 years, and they are reluctant to give up control of their house. So irrevocable is good from lawyers and taxes and Medicaid standpoints. Clients really don't get too excited about giving, you know, up control over their, you know, the biggest asset that they own. So there is a sort of a conflict between people who think that trusts do something better than wills, and I would say it's probably about an even Steven proposition. What I tell clients, wills are cheap, easy, fast, changeable. Trusts a little more costly, some work, both to create the trust and then to transfer assets into it, like your house, your bank accounts, your stock portfolio. And during your lifetime, trusts are also a little difficult if you want to get stuff out of it. There are consequences, there are proofs, there are things you have to do in order to deal with assets once in the trust. So it's a little more money up front, a little more complicated up front. But my feeling is, for the most part, simple wills pretty much take care, are the basic level of protection that most clients need.
Now, this one just came across, and this is an interesting question as it relates to just the topic of a will. Within a will, how are the assets distributed to whoever is named in the will?
So with a will, besides, you know, I told you that a will is your wish of how your assets, which are in your name alone, Jason Versace, not Jason Versace and Bob Howe, not Jason Versace and your kids or your wife, if their names are on it, or not Jason in trust for your kids or your wife, just plain old Jason assets. It's your wish of how Jason's plain old assets will get transferred to people that you really want to benefit in your life. In your case, probably your spouse and children. If you didn't have spouse and children, maybe your brothers and sisters. If you didn't have any brothers and sisters, you may want to leave it to nieces and nephews. So within that context of a will, you'd name an executor. An executor is sort of a business manager of the estate. It's someone that you have confidence in that will execute your wishes. Their job is to retain a lawyer, go to court, have the will probated. They become the executor. Then they would start their job of marshaling the assets, in other words, finding out what you own and collecting them into an estate account, then making sure all your bills and taxes are paid, and then telling the beneficiaries that this is the net after all the expenses have been paid. So, for instance, you may say, you know, you have $100,000 and $5,000 or $10,000 is paid for expenses and funerals and lawyers and accountants and filing fees and clean-outs and all sorts of things. And then what's ever left over, that $90,000, is going to be split among the beneficiaries. So the executor really has the job of collecting the assets, paying bills, and then telling the beneficiaries, this is what's left over, this is the net, and the will says you get a certain percentage of it, and you will get your percentage or whatever the net is. So that's how things are distributed to beneficiaries.
So if I had an old vaudeville act and I was a juggler, could my former juggling partner come forward and say, you know, even though it might not be specified in the will, could they lay claim and say, well, we were partners in the past, and, you know, he said something to me, you know, 30 years ago. Is there any way for someone to have any type of claim on a will, even if they're not specifically named?
Well, generally, to have a claim, you would need to be some type of a blood relative, generally. Promises that are not written down generally are just that, they're promises. And if you and I met in a bar or restaurant and I said, Jason, you're a nice guy, I want to leave you $100,000, but I never went to my lawyer and wrote that into my will, you would not have much of a chance to, you know, to collect from me. However, if you were one of my closer blood relatives, a brother, a niece, a nephew, something like that, and I promised something to you or you took care of me for years and thought you were going to get something, well, maybe that, in that case, you might have some sort of argument to come forward and say, you know, he really wanted to leave me his estate, but for some reason, some diabolical relative dragged him to a lawyer and forced my uncle to make them the beneficiary. Or what many people do is they take the uncle, they don't even bother going to the lawyer, they go right to the bank and have their names put on the accounts, so there is no go to the lawyer, go to surrogate's court, go to probate. It's merely go to the bank, show uncle's death certificate, my name is on as beneficiary, and I collect everything. So that's sort of is a diabolical way of making sure that you know, you're included in the person's estate plans. But as a general rule, if you're not in the will, you don't have much of a chance. If you're a friend or a business partner, if you're a relative, then you might have some arguments you can make. If you're a spouse and have been cut out of a will, a spouse is really the only person that is able to definitely get something out of the will, regardless of diabolical relatives or what. Spouses, if they're cut out, generally are entitled to about a third of the estate of their deceased spouse if they're cut out. So you don't have to leave the rotten kids in your will. You don't have to leave friends or relatives in the will, but you probably have to make some provision, you know, for your spouse.
Now, this next question comes up a lot, I'm sure, for anyone who's entering the workforce or newly to the workforce or even for a few years, and anyone who starts a job in corporate America knows that they can't do a thing until they complete their benefits package, and usually that means you have to name your beneficiaries. Now, is there any tie or link to naming your beneficiaries on any type of benefits document, be it a 401k or life insurance, anything of that nature? Is there any link or connection to a will?
Well, there could be. We go back to that concept of if you own an asset which is in your name alone, meaning you don't have a Jason and Bob, Jason in trust for Bob, Jason payable upon death to Bob, in trust for, etc., or those are assets in your name alone, well, then a will would control that. However, as you point out, when you do go into a job situation, your first job generally, you may not have this information at your fingertips. You may not have been prepared for this question. So most people will put down maybe somebody's name. So husband will put down his wife, a wife will put down her husband. If you're a 20-something and you have no spouses or significant others or partners or children, generally you name maybe your parents. Maybe you name your brothers and sisters. When you name someone on an asset in trust for or A and B or payable upon death, those are called testamentary substitutes. Once again, testamentary will means a will. It's a will substitute. So that takes the place of a will. So you could theoretically pass away owning all assets that have both your name, somebody else's name on it, and at that point don't need to see the lawyer, don't need to go to court, just go to the various institutions, show the death certificate. You're either a joint owner or you get the property in trust or payable upon death. And those are called testamentary substitutes, and you get them almost automatically, you know, after a person's death. Problem with a testamentary substitute couple, so this is could be your first job, and you've named your parents as your beneficiaries. You change jobs 100 times, as most of these millennials are doing, and fast forward 30, 40 years ago, you forget that you took out maybe a life insurance policy or some sort of a compensation package with job number one, and your parents' names, who are now deceased, are still on those assets. You may have forgotten to go back and change the beneficiaries on some of them. Sometimes people put other people's names on as joint owners, A and B. That's okay if you trust B 101%, but anything short of that, B could theoretically walk into the bank one day, say, give me all the money, and they would be in their rights to do so. So there are a few safeguards you have to worry about, you know, with putting other people's names on your assets, but they do serve a purpose, and it provides for a quick, easy way for the beneficiary to get the money. Many times you see what a person may do is they'll set up a small bank account, say $10,000, and put somebody else's name on as a joint owner and say to that person, all right, this $10,000 account is really not yours, but I want you to take the money and pay for my burial later on in life. So it's helpful in that way, but if you put somebody else's name on it as a joint owner, they own it and could take all the money out tomorrow. So you do have to be a little bit careful of how you title some of those testamentary substitutes. So just make sure you know what you're doing and remember what you did.
So the lesson to be learned here is on your first job, make sure you go back and take your old girlfriend's name off of being the beneficiary of your 401k.
I would say that could get sticky, but now as I think about it, you're probably not around, but whoever is around, it'll be sticky for them.
Yep. And lastly, the final question that we got regarding wills is there any reason for a will that has nothing to do with assets? Is there a reason why someone would have a will and doesn't have to do with, you know, distributing their estate?
All right, that's a good question, and that usually comes up in the context of young couples who have children. Generally, in a married situation, most of the assets you will accumulate will have both your names on it. You'll buy a house. The bank will require husband and wife to be on the deed. You'll go to the bank. Generally, you'll open up joint accounts. You'll buy insurance from an insurance salesperson, life insurance. Generally, you'll put on your spouse's name as the beneficiary. So for young couples, it's not so much the asset allocation or distribution that you're concerned about, but the designation of a guardian if you have minor children. So wills typically say, I give everything to my spouse. If my spouse shall predecease me, then to my children. And then sometimes if you have young children, you might say, in the event my wife predeceases me and I have minor children, I appoint my brother Joe or my sister Mary as the guardians of any minor children. Now, that's always a subject to approval by the court, but this is your wish as to who will take care of your minor children. It's a pretty strong wish. You know, courts will usually abide by it. That generally is the reason why you would have a will, even though you had all joint assets, you would have your you would name a guardian for your minor children, and that would be your wish that so and so of your friends or family would be the guardian of your minor children, not have someone else step forward who you didn't think would have the same caring and parental, you know-how that you'd like to see your children grow up with.
Well, this has been a very informative show on wills. We had a lot of information, a lot of questions that I'm sure are on people's minds, but they just keep putting them off, or they don't research it, and then, you know, these are things that everyone should know, especially when considering a will, and it sounds like everyone should be considering a will and can consider a will. It doesn't exclude anybody, and this is something that folks should look into and take some of this advice to heart.
Yes, as we say, everybody should have a will. You may never need it, but if you do need it, it's too late to have gotten it.
Well, this brings us to the end of our legal topic show. So, Bob, why don't you take us out?
All right. Well, thank you, Jason. It was an interesting and informative, and I even brushed up on some of these concepts as I'm thinking them through. This concludes our tonight's radio program. We talked about why you need a will. And this is Howes New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I'm your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.